Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, as we progress through life's middle years and middle age, I'm certain, like me, you have begun to spend more and more time and energy pondering your next phase, the afterlife. And wouldn't it be great if you could hire your very own private investigator to explore what's happened to departed loved ones and what's in store for you? Well, on today's program, we have the next best thing. Our guest, Bob Olson, is a former PI who's written a brand new book called Answers About the Afterlife. A private investigator's 15-year research unlocks the mysteries of life after death. And I've read Bob's book, and I can tell you he's got some good news and some bad news. The good news is actually great news. All of us has absolutely nothing to fear. In fact, much to look forward to in dying in the flesh and moving on, actually back to the spirit world. And the bad news, it's not so bad, but it's possibly disturbing for some. A lot of what we may presently believe about God, the devil, heaven, and hell may not be true. You may not agree with everything he has to say, and Bob isn't asking you to. He encourages each one of us to be skeptical, because it's not what I've concluded, as he puts it, or that someone else believes that matters in the end. It's what you choose to believe that's most important. And Bob Olson graduated from college in 1985 with a degree in criminology, but when his father died at age 64 in 1997, he decided to apply his skills as a private investigator to investigate the afterlife, and he spent 15 years investigating and 3 years writing his book, Answers About the Afterlife, and has created several websites and offers an online course for psychics and mediums. And hello, Bob. It's indeed an honor to have you with us here today.
Well, hi, Roy. It's an honor to be here. You know, you're an investigator yourself. You came up with all that information about me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Good for you. Wow.
Yeah, you're more than you think you are.
You made it sound so good.
Well, let's start with the basics just to establish some credibility for what you have to say. Can you sort of describe your methods of investigation into the afterlife, and what were your primary sources of information? Where do you go to investigate that?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, what was interesting about it is when after my father died and I decided to do this, I had no idea really where to go. And this was, you know, this was late 90s, and there's a lot more information today than there was then.
Yeah.
So I went in the wrong directions. But just to answer your question, I will say that after 2 years, I finally, after 2 years of finding nothing, as far as I was concerned, I finally went to what I learned was called a medium or a psychic medium, someone who claims to communicate with people in spirit.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe I was probably wasting my money when I went there. Yeah. And it was a life-changing event because I ended up with, I spent 3 hours with this person. The reading was going so well, she didn't want it to end either. And she gave me all kinds of information, not just about my what things my father was telling her, but things that other loved ones who had died were telling her as well. So that's where I get started, and it kind of went from there.
I know you've had some of your own regression experiences, as you call them, or experiences with some afterlives and some other things, personal observations.
Yeah, I'll have to say, this is the thing, you know, I talk about with people, you know, that we have vicarious experiences where, you know, we hear about somebody else's experiences and
we
sort of live vicariously through them, or we have our own personal experiences.
Yeah.
And for me, it was the personal experiences that were the most compelling. And so, I had after that reading, and I did a lot more work with mediums after that. But then I was like, what's next? And I heard about people regressing with like this hypnotic regressionist into past lives, and I said, you know, maybe other people can do it. I don't think I can do it, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I went into this past life where I was this guy named George in 1643, and there was this whole story that I never could have come up with on my own about how I lived in this Celtic land and the English were trying to take our land, and we had just won a battle, and so we were celebrating that we had won this battle, and then we got ambushed by them during our parade. And it just went on from there. But you know what was interesting to me about it was I left that experience knowing for myself, and I realized it didn't really matter if anybody else believed me. I knew for myself that I went through that experience. I knew something was real about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's start with probably the key question for most people, a key question maybe. Who and what is God?
Oh,
and
wow.
And you have quite a different outlook on that in your book from what I think most people think. You describe him as in your book, you describe God as the oneness that creates everything, but it isn't the kind of God, certainly, that appears in the Old Testament of the Bible. Or tell us a little about the difference between your concept of God and the concept that a lot of us hold.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, I write a lot better than I can explain things in speaking, but I will do my best. And really, it came down to, it wasn't that far. I grew up Catholic, and it wasn't that far from my understanding of God as a young boy.
Yeah.
I didn't believe in anything in my 20s and 30s because evidence was so important to me. But God, to me, as I began investigating life after death, including people who had near-death experiences and regressions and mediums, and was that the big difference to me was that I saw the evidence to me showed that God was not a big guy in the sky, you know, and it wasn't this emotional parent-like figure that was judging us, but it was this creative intelligence that was more of an energy than an entity. And so rather than have this personal relationship with this one man who seemed to be in control of all of my life, and then when things went bad in my life, I wondered, what did I do wrong in his eyes? Why is he punishing me? Why is he ignoring me? Those sorts of things. I recognized, no, this is the creative intelligence of the universe. This is, ultimately, this is love.
Yeah.
The light that everybody hears about. You know, people go into the spirit world, they see the light, they go towards the light. So it is that that energy, some call it source energy, that really is everything. I mean, we are part of that. You know, we are part of that, and our souls are part of that. And
I would think most people would agree that God resides, or whatever you want to call it, it resides in all of us. We're kind of like the waves, and God is the ocean, so to speak.
That's right, exactly. And I, you know, what's interesting about it is, and it's the same thing I say in the book many times. You know, I don't want anybody to take my word for it, but the evidence that I've seen based on it, that was the understanding that I had.
Yeah.
So even people who, most people, not everybody, most people who had near-death experiences would say that they didn't actually see God as like a person. They saw God as this energy of love.
Yeah, I think when you think about it, when you think about the Old Testament and when that was written, people were thought the world was flat and that the sun and the moon and all these things just revolved around there, came up and went down. And so obviously maybe God seemed a lot smaller to them than what, and maybe a lot more involved. They had no idea of the vastness of the universe and everything that was going on. And I've always been troubled when I was growing up and stuff, whenever I'd read in the Old Testament that God told the Israelites that this was their land and they should pillage and plunder and kill off all the tribes that were living there.
Yeah, right. These contradictions that happen when you do study religion, there's these little contradictions along the way that you go, wait, that doesn't feel right.
No.
You know? It doesn't make sense to me that God would be like that, that separation would occur.
Yeah.
And it seems like he or it would be more all-encompassing, you know,
yeah,
loving everyone equally.
Yeah, and certainly, I always was extremely bothered by people that say that, you know, Christianity is the only way to eternal life and this kind of stuff, because obviously a loving God does not condemn all the Buddhists of the world or all the followers of Islam or anything else in
right.
the world.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, right? You know, you talk about middle age. You get to middle age and some of these things just aren't making sense anymore. Yeah,
that's very true. But one thing that bothers me a little is if God exists as a primarily or as an energy source,
yep,
but not as our father, as we always grow up to be, and an entity active in human affairs, why do we pray and who do we pray to? And what can we anticipate in response?
Well, that, you know, and so this is what's great about it. To me, this is where there really isn't that much of a difference than what I understood as a boy.
Yeah.
We're still praying to God. We're still praying to, you know, I think creative intelligence is a great phrase because it's the intelligence of the universe. It's the intelligence of all that we know. But, you know, for me, you know, there was... There's different parts of God, meaning I believe that God, in order to experience things, created souls. Now, souls are still part of God.
Yeah.
Just like my arm is still part of my body.
Yeah.
But it created souls in order to experience that, and then the souls created spirits in order to experience life.
Yeah.
And so when we pray, we're praying to... I think we're praying to our higher self, which I call our soul. We're praying to our spirit guides. We're praying to our loved ones in spirit.
Yeah.
And by doing that, you know, God is part of all of that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so our prayers are heard. I have no question in my mind. People who have had near-death experiences said that while they were there, they saw these little energy, these prayers as like little balls of energy light that would go by them, and they saw them doing their thing.
That's great.
Isn't it?
Yeah, please describe the hierarchy in the spiritual world as you point out in your book, because I've never really, in all the past studies, I've always considered spirit and soul as basically the same thing, but you have a real distinction there, and was wondering how you came up with that distinction and what is the difference between a soul and a spirit?
Well, you know, I don't even know how it came to me, be honest with you. I think, so what I try to do, I'm a big picture guy. I like to look at the big picture, you know.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to make sense of these questions that I had, that just like everybody has, you know.
Yeah.
And so nothing was making sense the way I was looking at it when spirit and soul were the same,
because
I did the same thing. It wouldn't make sense. It wasn't answering the questions that I was having when I got to the deeper questions. And then, for whatever reason, it came to me, and then I had to make sure that it worked with all the different things. So I had to make sure it works with what spirits were saying through mediums. I had to make sure it worked when people have, when you talk about reincarnation, I had to make sure it worked with people who had near-death experiences and all kinds of other things. And it does. And so I'll give you one question that I had that never made sense. And a lot of people worry about this, which is if, let's just say my father's passed. So if my father reincarnates before I die, does that mean he won't be there when I cross over, you know, I go home?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, a lot of people worry about that.
Yeah.
And with this explanation that I'll give you is, no, I mean, that's not actually the case. So...
Yeah.
As I explained, God creates, wants to experience things. For one experience would be the human lifetime. Creates souls in order to do that. Thousands, you know, whatever, probably millions of souls.
Yeah.
And the souls then create spirits to have a lifetime. And you mentioned the ocean and the waves, and I use that to describe the relationship between the soul and the spirit. It's never separate. But what the ocean does is the ocean decides it wants to experience the shore.
Yeah.
And so in order to re-experience the shore, it sends a wave to the shore, but the wave is never separate from the ocean, and then it comes back to it.
So the soul stays out in the spirit world, and in fact, the spirit is what comes into our human bodies and sends us out into the...
But every time it wants to experience a new life, so for me, it experienced, it created a spirit that would be Bob, and then for, if it decided to experience another life as the one I had in my past life regression, that was George. That guy's name was George. So now me and George share the same soul. So that's why I can have a regression and I can say, oh yeah, that was my past life. But in reality, and technically, it was my soul's past life.
Yeah.
It wasn't my past life. And George still exists. George still exists as part of the other way I try to describe things so it makes it easy is like I belong to the Olsen family.
Yeah.
And I left to go explore life on my own, but every so often I come back to my family and we all are together. I don't merge into something that where I don't exist anymore. I'm still Bob, but I'm also an Olsen, you know?
So
the Olsens, in this case, would be, you know, metaphorically the soul, and then my spirit still being Bob. And that's the way I understand it. Nobody has to accept that.
Yeah, no, I certainly see what you're saying. I don't want to get off into a religious discussion or anything because this is all-encompassing.
Yeah.
But you mentioned, as you mentioned before, you grew up as a Catholic.
Yeah.
In your entire book, you make no mention of Jesus Christ. And based on your evidence, did any spirits represent the risen Christ when you were speaking with him? And who was Jesus and who sent him to earth if God is really not an entity or one involved in human affairs? And is he indeed distinct from other advanced messengers from the spirit world? Or where exactly does Christ fit into all this?
To me, all right. Well, one thing I will say, I'm not an expert on Jesus Christ. What I have recognized, though, is that people, I'll go back to near-death experiences. And near-death experiences are when people technically die, say on the operating table for a few seconds to a few minutes. They're revived, they come back. While they were dead, they had this experience where they went into the spirit world. They had these experiences. Now, they're usually greeted by a spiritual being of some sort. Now, if people are Christian, they might see Jesus.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If they're of different religions, then they'll see people who are related to those different religions.
Yeah, if they're Islam, they might see Muhammad, I guess.
That's exactly it. And so, and it seems it's very consistent in that. And children who don't really understand religion at all, they will see, some will say a being of light, some will say a lady in white, some will, they'll come up with all these childlike descriptions of who greeted them. And sometimes it's people like their grandfather who passed.
Yeah. And in a world that, an eternal creation would not send, there would not be more than one messenger to humanity, reflecting the different religions, because obviously there's not a lot of paths to experience the world and to go back into the spirit world. And when you think about it, everything Christ said about love and compassion and all that fits right in with what your conception is of the spirit world, I guess.
Well, it seems to, and what's interesting is that it doesn't really matter because to whatever name or description we give of this person, they seem to be seeing their belief or their understanding of what love is, like the most loving being. So to some people, it's Jesus. I talked to a guy recently who lost his brother, his younger brother, when they were in their 20s, and he was driving along, and he was very upset, and he was trying to understand this, and he said he looked over at the passenger seat, and Jesus was sitting there. And he put his arm on this man and said, everything's going to be all right. And then that was it. He disappeared. Yeah. And I said, well, what does that mean to you? He says, well, to me, Jesus means love and safety and peace.
Yeah.
And I said, well, there you go. Those were his beliefs. Now, if he had different beliefs, I'm sure he would have seen someone else. I don't think it really matters what name or description we give to them, it always means the same thing.
Yeah.
Something like love and safety and peace, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. I can see what you're saying there. But where do we go after we die, and what is the spirit world like? Will we reunite with loved ones from here on earth, and is death something to fear or something to look forward to, basically?
Yeah. I mean, you know, from my understanding, death is something to look forward to, no question about it. And
right.
And yes, we meet with all our loved ones. And so because of this description I've given you of soul and spirit,
yeah.
Our loved ones will be there to greet us, all the ones that we want to be there. And if we don't want some to be there, they'll respect that wish and they won't be there for us. It's like a family reunion. And this is true. From my understanding, this is true whether you lived a day or lived 90 years. There's always a reunion when you get back. But what's so cool about it is, as people in spirit, we're able to be, do, or have anything that we want. So
yeah, you say there's really no time in the spirit world either, so I guess it would make no difference whether you lived one day or 90 years.
That's right. I mean, some will say that everything's sort of happening at the same time. So we talk about past lives, but a lot of people who have had near-death experiences tell me that they prefer to use the term other lives.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Do our souls sometimes send out more than one spirit at the same time? Like, might we be several different people at the same point in life? Or
you know, I can't tell you based on the evidence whether that is true. I can tell you that my big picture conclusions, based on what I've seen, is that yes, that our souls are having multiple lives at one time. Now, we think that there's like only one Earth, but
yeah.
It's very possible that each time that our soul has a lifetime, it could be like our, for instance, my soul right now could be having a lifetime that was in, you know, the 1500s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And therefore, obviously, it couldn't be in my world that I'm existing in right now, because my world, we're not in the 1500s. So I think what happens when we try to fathom these understandings about what it's like in the spirit world, it's hard for our mind because we think in linear terms.
Well, you know, every time yesterday I was in the dentist's office and I was looking at National Geographic that had an article on the black holes and the universes and all that, and they say there's like trillions of stars and planets and things out there. So I was wondering if you had any evidence from spirit mediums or anything else of interaction with spirits from other worlds or universes, or do we tend to maybe exist in other universes? I guess you said it's certainly possible, but it's really beyond human conception, I guess.
I think the greatest evidence, the most compelling evidence, again, comes from people who have had near-death experiences, and it's not that they necessarily experienced these other worlds, but they remember other worlds that they've had. So that is why I said when say God creates souls to have experiences, it's not experience. There are other experiences and other dimensions that we're not even aware of. And that one of those experiences, and again, I can't tell you for sure because I haven't seen it, but some people who have had these near-death experiences come back and said that it might be like we would have an experience as a worm or a germ or, you know,
or
something that it isn't
that
intelligent.
You mean that mosquito I just swatted right away?
That's right. A mosquito. That's what I want to do next. Oh, you're funny.
Well, in your book, you say there's no hell or eternal damnation. If not, what happens to inherently evil people like serial killers or rapists? Maybe the ultimate example is Adolf Hitler. What is the punishment that somebody like Adolf Hitler would suffer for all the evil and suffering he brought into the world?
I even hesitate to answer that one because it's such a difficult question.
Yeah.
People don't really want to hear that anything other than eternal, you know, damnation is what was in store for him. But
yeah, I know all of our human sensibilities say that's what should be in store for him.
Yeah. My experience is that everybody goes to the same place. And
yeah.
So I have seen no evidence of hell. And people, the first thing people will say, well, people who have had near-death experiences say that they experienced hell. And that's true. And there, it's a small percentage of all the near-death experiences. And what happens is, as I said a few minutes ago, that we can have anything that we want to do, be, or have, we get in the spirit world. We're creative in that way, and we can create our own environments. But it also is true in this way, then, what we expect to have, we create. Now, this is not forever. This is... I know people who have had hellish experiences right after they died, and this comes from near-death experiences, and even people who have communicated through mediums, and they're still in the spirit world, they have hellish experiences, and then what happens is they think of something else. They'll think of a different alternative. One way of doing that is calling out for help. When you call out for help, another way of saying, there might be another alternative for me, so therefore I'm calling out for help.
Well, that's basically what we should be doing, in prayer in our current lives. If we, the situation's too big for us, or we're praying for someone else that we're calling out for help. And depending on our own, we had a program a couple weeks ago talks about that fly that keeps banging its head against the window trying to get out when the door is open 10 feet away.
<That's>,
but they don't call for help.
Well, that's a great analogy, because that's exactly what my experience is. And so there's been a lot of people who have had the hellish near-death experiences, and that's what happened, is they thought of a different alternative, and then they created that for themselves.
Yeah.
So the hellish experience was one that they expected to have for whatever reason, and that's end up what they had. But it wasn't, if they had stayed in the spirit world, that wouldn't have continued to be their experience.
Well, you talk about a life review that we go through after we die in your book, and I just can't imagine a life review with a loving spirits or souls or whoever you're having the review with, that for somebody like Hitler that said, well, Adolf, you should have stopped at 5 million instead of 11, but maybe you can do better the next time.
And this is where those people who want to see someone like Hitler suffer, this is where his suffering does exist.
Yeah.
So when you have the life review, you recognize how your choices and actions affected other people. And no one will be harder on you than yourself.
Yeah.
The other spirits are there actually to sort of help you work through that experience. But... what
I read
happens
a book one
is,
time that talked about what hell really is the light comes upon evil and the dark person that did evil in their lives, and the spirit is, it's like a refinement, and it is like hell as you go through that self-assessment and you realize all the evil you've done, and then eventually you're refined and you come out the other side rather than be eternally damned. I kind of like that concept, and because God is light and God is love, and
Well, and that's it, and that's exactly. And you said it better than I could have said it. And evil doesn't exist in the spirit world. It's one of the reasons we have a human experience, is because we have evil, injury, illness, hatred. We have all these things here. We can't experience them in spirit. So when we go back to spirit, we're still not going to experience those things. But we certainly can experience remorse, self-reproach, and all those things for our deeds here. And of course, the worse the deeds, the more we have to deal with there. But we do work through those things, and we come out better the other side.
I play the devil's advocate, which is kind of a joke, because we just said there's no devil. But what if indeed Satan does exist and is the second most powerful entity after God in the universe? Isn't it possible that Satan isolates inhabitants of hell so that they're not able to communicate with us or to the spirit world, and in fact they're there because he wants to lead us into evil behavior, so we end up down there, and maybe there's a black hole called hell that there really is something like that, and we just can't make contact with anybody.
Well, I always leave those possibilities open. The only thing that I sort of looked for over the 15 years that I was doing this research was, is there anybody ever missing? Have I ever met anybody who says, my loved one's missing?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's a real good point you make in your book. If nobody's ever missing, that the only explanation for that would be that somehow all memories of those evil people are blotted out of the...
Well, there you go. And there you go. And certainly that's a possibility,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we don't know. I mean, a lot of people like to, I don't know if they like to, but they seem to like to think that this might all just be someone's, you know, dream. And this could just, you know, we're just part of a dream. There's no way anybody could prove whether that
well,
was true.
We are. I hope that entity doesn't wake up.
That's right. It might be a dog's dream.
Yeah. Well, your book tells us that when we die, we're effectively returning home to the spirit world, which is where we came from, and I certainly don't disagree with that. But is our life pretty much pre-planned and mapped out by our soul before we were born, so that everything that happens to us, even our death, is pretty much predetermined? Or what about our free will as humans? How much do we have as humans for free will, or is it all planned out in advance?
No, well, no. You know what? What's planned in advance is what we would like to experience, and it's not so much accomplish, but more experience.
Yeah.
But all those things are set up as potentials.
Yeah. I see.
And so, as a potential, we'll say if someone might have the potential of being suicidal in their lifetime.
Yeah.
There's people who, there's no way they would even consider it. It's not in their DNA. They would never, the thought of suicide would never enter their minds. And then there's other people who are tempted by suicide throughout their life. So they have that potential. Now, it's their free will that chooses whether or not they're going to, you know, go in that direction. But what's interesting about that is you have to take that a little further than that. So then even the people in that person's life, maybe the guy's wife now has the potential that she will lose her husband to suicide.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a potential that she came into this life with. Otherwise, she never would have married a guy who had that potential of taking his life. So everybody around the people who took their life or were murdered or whatever came into this life with that potential.
Yeah.
Now,
you talk about maybe there's some soul pre-agreements.
Definitely.
You know, the one I can't figure out again is Hitler, but he had to find 11 million souls that wanted to be experienced being in a concentration camp and being you know, exterminated in the Holocaust, and that's a little tough to.
Well, no, it is. I mean, it's you know, that's, you know, it's really the question that I don't want to have to answer with everybody. So it's easier to sort of take it on a case by case basis.
Yeah, it's not necessary that we answer those kind of things, that we try to understand all those while we're alive, because obviously the people that did suffer through concentration camp experience have great love and compassion for their fellow beings that no one else could really generate going through something like that. It's just so horrible at a prison camp or whatever it might be that you experience. But it does, obviously, when you go back to the spirit world, it makes you a fuller person and with more compassion for others. And
well, that's it. I mean, the one thing that I can say about it is that when we come into this life, where there's only love in the spirit world, we can come here and we can experience all sides to any particular experience. So in one lifetime, you might experience being a murderer. In another lifetime, you might experience being murdered. In another lifetime, you might experience being related to a murderer. And in another lifetime, you will experience being related to someone who was murdered. These are four different, completely different experiences that you can have in different lifetimes. That
you say that at some point spirits may graduate, or souls may graduate to the point where they don't need any more life experiences like that. I think I'd look forward to reaching that level. Of
some people believe it, and that used to be my theory. And then what happened was I tried to test it to find any evidence for it.
Yeah.
That eventually you would, you know, as with your spiritual growth, with all these lifetimes, you'd eventually get to a place where you would kind of re-merge with God or re-merge with the source energy. And, you know, that's kind of what we were saying earlier about, well, if that happens, then they wouldn't be around to tell us about it because they did that. So,
yeah.
But I haven't seen any evidence of it. But it's a beautiful theory, you know.
Yeah. Well, you report solid evidence of reincarnation. You mentioned George yourself, but one thing that's bothered me about that is it's the world population in 1650 was around 600 million, 1.6 billion in 1900, and 7 billion today. So that means that there must be a lot of new souls being created, or the souls are creating more and more spirits all the time. But, how do we explain that population growth?
Well,
maybe
I think it comes back to us recognizing that our souls, you know, number one, our souls might be having these experiences at the same time, but
yeah.
Also that our souls, if there were another spirit that was part of my soul that was experiencing a similar lifetime that I'm having right now, it might be completely different. Like, there might be no possible way for me to bump into that guy or girl because it was in another dimension somewhere. So, those questions, it's a great question, but the answers are, we might be talking about completely different worlds here or completely different dimensions. So really it's not a matter of adding up the numbers, you know.
No, and our minds just aren't able to comprehend all the possibilities.
No, that's it, you know.
You know, like what's after the end of the universe? That's always bothering
me. Well, there you go. Yeah, good question, right.
Well, a lot of us have made connection with departed loved ones, and others have not. Can a deceased loved one hear me when I talk to them? And how do spirits of those departed generally tend to communicate with us? Is there a common thread of how they communicate? And
there is, you know. Obviously, most people who are in spirit, they want to communicate with you. One of the reasons they want to communicate is because they don't like to see us grieve. You know, they don't like to see us go through that pain.
Yeah.
They want us to know that they are okay and that they're doing fine. Obviously, most people are not going to see a medium, so they don't have that ability. So what they do is they try to show themselves, show signs and signals in different ways. My father... I had no understanding of this field right after my father died, and one of the ways he did it was scent is a strong sign or signal that they send. So for me and my family, it just seemed we kept smelling the smell of lilacs very, very strongly. And even in places where there were no lilac bushes or the windows were closed, in the car, all kinds of different crazy places. And it was a huge, you know, overwhelming waft of the smell of lilacs. And it was meaningful to us because we planted a lilac tree next to his grave site.
My wife and I have a really interesting experiences. Our daughter, Kristen, was a naval pilot, and she was killed in a plane crash in the last day of 2006. And a few months later, my wife was at a craft fair, and I don't think she was a professional medium, but she obviously had made some connection with spirits, and she came running up and said our daughter was talking to us, and she chuckled and said, "I'm fine," and that was exactly the way our daughter would have talked. And then a few weeks later, I discovered the back seat of the car was clearly vacant, nothing there. And then when we came back, there was my old sunglass case and a refund check from the IRS. And then I had even a stranger experience that I went up and mailed some mail, and when I looked over, there was the sunglasses on the seat next to me that I swear weren't there.
Wow.
When I left.
Yeah.
And we have flickering lights a lot, light bulbs around here. The street lights will flicker out when I go by.
Well, these are all great examples of ways that they communicate with us. And
the strangest is we had a Springer Spaniel named Chips, and we discovered some dark brown things underneath the desk a few weeks back, and we looked under, and lo and behold, our dog had been put down back in October, I think it was, because he could no longer walk. He was like 14 years old.
Wow.
But we found some of his dog food under the desk.
Wow.
There was no way it had been there before. It just showed
no.
up.
No, yeah, you would have smelled that.
There, the dog himself, but the
well, these are all perfect examples. I mean, you answered the question better than I could have. I mean, it was perfect because these are real life examples from your life, and there's all sorts of the possibilities. But really, I mean, what it comes down to, you kind of referred to the coincidence of it. There's no way, you know, and I call them divine coincidences. Some say synchronicity, but when there's a coincidence that is so strong and so meaningful and it's related to your loved one in spirit, then that creates an awareness that you really need to pay attention to, because it may be your loved one just trying to say hello, trying to say, hey, I'm here, I'm okay.
So you definitely say psychic mediums and channelers are legitimate, but how do you select the right one and make sure that you detect the potential fraud? Are there any good ways to... I guess you have a roster of good psychic mediums that are out there.
Yeah, I do. I got a couple of websites, bestpsychicdirectory.com and bestpsychicmediums.com. But you know, you can also just get a referral from someone that you know and trust who has been to a medium.
I see.
The problem with that is if you don't like the same books and you don't like the same TV shows or movies than this person, you might not like the same medium they chose. But it doesn't mean they're not legitimate. It just means they might not be the best medium for you.
Yeah.
But referral is really the best way to get started. Otherwise, it is pretty hard for people to know the difference between.
Yeah, you point out that you don't want to go to a medium where they ask you a bunch of leading questions in advance, and then they kind of spit back at you what you already told them.
And you don't. I mean, you want to answer yes, no, or maybe to that person, and you want that agreement. You know, even as you're setting the appointment, you can let them know, I only want to answer yes, no, or maybe questions.
Yeah.
I don't want you fishing for information from me.
Yeah, you give some excellent examples in the book of how somebody might do that really doesn't have much to add as a psychic medium.
That's right. You know, and I give some examples of what a good medium reading is like, and it starts off, they're not giving you these messages that they love you and they forgive you and you know, those are vague messages. You want them to describe your loved one.
Yeah, that's true.
And describe how they died and describe what they did for work, and you want to go to a stranger as well, you know. My first reading was with a stranger, and if the person had known me, how could I ever know if they were just coming up with this stuff because they knew it?
Yeah, you'd have to be careful of that. They know your history and everything. They just spit that back at you.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
Well, where should someone go to preview and purchase your excellent book, Answers About the Afterlife?
The best place to buy it is on Amazon.com. And so Answers About the Afterlife, you know, you just type that in, or my name, Bob Olson.
Yeah.
But if you go to BobOlson.com, BobOlson, you can read more about the book there. There's some reviews from some other, famous authors, and you can download a copy of the introduction, which lists most of the most compelling evidence that I use to come up with these answers.
Yeah, that'd be a great way to start. So that's www.BobOlson.com.
That's a great way to start.
Yeah, and you also even have another website called Afterlife TV that has some interesting programs on there.
I love Afterlife TV has just been such a gift for me, as you well know. You know, I get to interview a lot of the experts in this field.
Yeah, I've had so much great experiences from interviewing people like you.
Isn't it fun?
It's a lot of fun.
It just fills up my heart, fills up my life. I love it. I wouldn't want to do anything else. I don't think I'll ever stop doing it.
Yeah, well, I'm certain that Bob Olson does not have all the answers, and he doesn't claim to. And at the end of the book, he has an excellent reason to launch your very own journey to understand the afterlife. And his book, he says, I have come to know my purpose in life is to have experiences, positive and negative, and it's our free will that gives us the choice on how we respond to what happens to us. And I now understand the spiritual depth of those people who keep smiling in spite of their setbacks and sufferings. I love the way Bob puts that. And these people inspire us and respond with to life with love, which is all that our souls know in the spirit world. I love that statement. And you know, you and I have that same choice in life, and we have nothing to fear from death, because in the spiritual world, everything will be fine in the end. So let's go out and live the rest of our lives out loud, not out of fear, but in joy and in compassion and service to others. And thank you so much, Bob Olson, for this stimulating discussion, and I highly recommend your book.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This was such a pleasure. I was wondering if maybe you could do all my other interviews for me, because you really learned this book well. Wow.
Well, like I said, I spent a lot of hours thinking on this. It's anyone, that whatever your current religious beliefs, it's really great to get somebody else's point of view on it. You know, you may have followed dogma in a particular religion or whatever, but
yeah,
this will open your eyes to all the other possibilities. And yet, in the end, it's really not contradictory to anything positive that other religions have to say, if they're based on love and compassion for our fellow man or fellow woman.
Wow, you said that beautifully. It's so true. I couldn't agree with you more. Boy, you just have such a nice way of articulating yourself. I love it.
Believe me, you're one of the best interviews I've ever had, and I'm all inspired to go out there and live the life we talk about. And thanks so much, Bob.
All right, thank you, Roy.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Wow, my head's still spinning. Whatever your religion, Bob Olson has certainly given us a lot to think about, but it's all positive when you think the bottom of it. He's a tough act to follow, but here are three observations. My first observation would be that all the great religious books, the Talmud, the Bible, the Torah, the Koran, they are all written in languages that we little humans can understand. And they're written also when Earth was a far different place and the universe was a far different place than what we know it to be today. And we're only beginning to scratch the surface and the infinite vastness of our universe. And there's no way that words, however well written, can capture the vastness and splendor of that infinite power that we call God. And my second observation is, if we keep in mind the wonderful core essence of God, which as Bob described and every expert would describe, love, wisdom, light, compassion, we'll all be fine. And maybe your picture of God is not exactly the same as my picture of God, but so what? And the third and final message, and Bob makes that clear, that in the end we'll all be fine. So a worthy goal for the rest of our life on Earth is to experience all that we can. And I would suggest we seek positive experiences, not negative experiences. No, I'm not suggesting you give away all you own so you can experience poverty, hunger, and homelessness, because what good really would that do for you or for anyone else? Seek positive goals, but sensible ones, not foolhardy ones. But let's all get up out of that midlife rut that we've been in and pray for guidance on a way out. And here's a secret most people understand. The best way to bring joy and prosperity into your life is to seek out ways to help others. Because you know that once you become a person of increase, as Bob had put it, once we become persons of increase, then we will bring and receive joy and prosperity in return. And that's it for today. Tune in next week when we'll chat about heaven and hell. And if you find yourself after death in hell, is there any way for you to get out? See you next week.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.